What changing net neutrality rules may mean for Maine and the nation. Federal Communications Commission is expected to vote any minute now on important rules governing the internet. It's expected that the FCC will repeal the 2015 net neutrality regulations. Those rules prohibit internet service providers, ISPs, from blocking some content, slowing down the speed it delivers content, or providing fast lanes to other content for a higher price. The chair of the FCC believes current regulations stifle innovation and are too heavy-handed. But those who support net neutrality say its elimination will create an unfair playing field, drive up consumer costs, and give ISPs too much control. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll learn more about net neutrality, what the change in rules may mean for people in Maine, and find out what happens next after the FCC votes. Maine Calling is next, but first this news. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Federal Communications Commission's push to repeal net neutrality would change how the internet is regulated or not regulated. Today, we're going to examine just what net neutrality is and what this change might mean. With me in the studio, Mohammed T. Irfan. He is Assistant Professor of Digital and Computational Studies and Computer Science at Bowdoin College. And joining us from our Bangor studio, Dr. Michael Sokolow. He's Associate Professor of Communication and Journalism at the University of Maine, where he is also the Graduate Coordinator. Later this hour, Senator Angus King is scheduled to call in to share his thoughts on net neutrality. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about what net neutrality means? Are you wondering how you or your business might be affected by the FCC's proposed changes? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I think it's important to note that the FCC is meeting right now, as we are on the air. The meeting began around 10:30. We were expected to have a vote by now, but the room had to be cleared because of an apparent bomb threat. The room was searched. The people are being brought in, the FCC board members, as well as those who are in the room observing, have been brought back into the room. And FCC Chair Ajit Pai is scheduled to speak any minute. As soon as we have news of an FCC vote, we, of course, we'll talk about it. But I want to start with you, Mohammed Irfan. What is net neutrality and what is not net neutrality? It's one of those simple things that's sort of hard to get your head around a little bit.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be back on this show, and I look forward to a great conversation. And before I start, listen, the topic is net neutrality. So I will be neutral on this topic. So first of all, what is net neutrality? It refers to an extremely simple principle that says that our internet service providers, or in short, ISPs, must treat all content on the internet the same. In other words, the ISPs cannot discriminate based on who is the content provider. Is it Netflix, Google, or some other website? And the ISPs cannot also discriminate based on what kind of content is it. Is it a website with a lot of text, or is it a website with a lot of video or photos? And the other thing is that the ISPs cannot discriminate based on the platform that we use to access the internet. For example, am I using accessing the internet using my laptop computer or a mobile phone or a gaming device like PlayStation? Now, so basically, it's a no discrimination principle. Now, the other flip side of this question is, what is not a violation of net neutrality regulation? So if you go to Comcast, for example, to purchase an internet service, you'll see different tiers of service. Some services are like 25 megabits per second, some others are 100 megabits per second, and so on. So having different tiers of internet service does not violate net neutrality regulations, because it does not discriminate based on content or content providers. Another example of not violating net neutrality could be your mobile data plan slowing down after you reach certain caps. For example, unlimited data plans, there's a threshold of like 22 gigabytes, after which your data service will slow down. Now, this is also not a violation of net neutrality because it does not discriminate against content.
Right. So when they're saying you have a cap on your data speed, it's not saying you're having a cap on your data speed for this kind of content, but not this kind of content. It would be
The cap is basically on how much data you're using. So in terms of gigabytes. Yes.
Mike Sokolow, what exactly is the FCC voting on today? Is this a sweeping, we're just going to undo what was passed in 2015, or is it more nuanced than that?
I think it's a bit more nuanced than that. So, for instance, I've heard a lot of people refer to the rolling back of the Obama-era regulations. What they're actually voting on today were the rules put in 2015 after a court case in 2014 called Verizon versus FCC basically wiped out the way net neutrality had been enforced since 2004. So what the FCC under Tom Wheeler and the Obama administration needed to do was to go back to the George Bush administration's FCC, which had enunciated something called the four internet freedoms. And those are the freedom to access content, the freedom to use applications, the freedom to attach personal devices, and the freedom to obtain service plan information. And what happened in the 2014 court case, which Verizon won, is the court didn't say there's anything wrong with net neutrality. It simply said the principle that the FCC is applying to ensure net neutrality is wrong. And so it could have radically altered the entire conception of how we think of the internet. So what happened is Obama's FCC stepped in, promulgated the rules in 2015, that today will go back to what it was after the 2014 court case.
Mohammed Irfan, who is for rescinding these rules and who is for keeping them?
Okay, so I can first talk about who is for net neutrality, like keeping the regulations. So there are numerous consumer advocates and civil rights groups, for example, ACLU, Electronic for Frontier Foundations, Free Press, and so on, that argue that are for net neutrality regulations. There are large companies mainly on the internet application side. For example, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Twitter, Facebook, all of them are for net neutrality. There are many prominent computer scientists, like the innovator of WWW, Tim Berners-Lee, and the co-innovator of one of the core protocols of the internet that we call TCP/IP, Vinton Cerf. They are all for net neutrality. Now, as a computer scientist, I must say here that it's a fascinating topic for me because two of the co-innovators of this TCP/IP protocol that actually governs the way the internet works have diverging views on this topic of net neutrality. As I've mentioned, Vinton Cerf, one co-innovator, is for net neutrality, and the other co-innovator, Bob Kahn, is against net neutrality regulations.
Interesting. Mike Sokolow, you argue that this really isn't a technology argument. This is a political argument. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is the FCC historically has had to make decisions about discrimination in our media. Take, for instance, this broadcast station. It has to apply for a license and claim to be in the public interest and that kind of way. And so ultimately, it's not really about technology. It's about the way we like to think about our media. And In historic context, the FCC has done quite a bit to use its regulatory powers to open up things to competition and diversity. So, for example, I have a piece in the Washington Post today that's going to talk about how the ABC network is a creation of the FCC. In 1943, the FCC insisted that NBC sell one of its two networks. NBC sued. It went to the Supreme Court, and that network became ABC. So that's an example of where the FCC historically has been able to ensure competition and diversity when it takes action, unlike today.
Is part, Mike, of what's going on today a bigger argument about whether or not the internet is a utility and whether or not the internet should be treated as phone companies were or electrification was?
Absolutely. And that's called Title II regulation. And that's why Verizon won its case against the FCC in 2014. Basically, the court said, you told the FCC, if you want net neutrality, you have to regulate common carriage just like AT&T. I think Mohammed would know about that, too, as well.
Mm-hmm. Mohammed, I just and Mike, I just want to let you know that we just got a note from our producer. The FCC commissioners just voted, and as expected, this repeal of the regulations passed 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mohammed, why don't I ask you, what now? Does this mean this afternoon, tomorrow, next week, your internet will be different?
That's a big question and very hard question to answer. So for that, I think we should concentrate on the back and forth arguments for and against net neutrality. So one of the arguments for net neutrality, for having net neutrality, is posed by Vinton Cerf, who said that the principle that made the internet such a success would be fundamentally undermined if ISPs were given the ability to affect what people see and do online. So that's a consumer-focused argument. And that brings forth this topic of digital rights and freedom. And a few days ago, there was one op-ed by comedian W. Kamau Bell on New York Times. He also mentioned there that without net neutrality, ISPs can block or slow down certain activisms, for example, Black Lives Matter. Now, the argument against that that's put forward by people who are against net neutrality regulations, they say that this will not, that type of censorship would not happen. And their reasoning is that if that happens, if the censorship happens, then the consumers will switch to a different ISPs. And they have given, and there are economists, for example, Nobel laureate economist Gary Becker, who are in that group, that say that there is significant competition that would actually ease the fear of censorship. Now, that argument is also debated by people who are pro-net neutrality. And there is recent data. For example, the latest data we have from FCC dates back to June of 2016. And the data shows that more than 50 million American households have access to only one ISP for high-speed broadband internet, where high speed is measured at 25 megabits per second. So whether there is a competition that would ease the fear of censorship, it's actually debatable. And there are other aspects, for example, businesses that focuses on businesses and overall the whole internet space like digital divide. We can go through those topics over time.
Mike Sokolow, the internet companies say that they won't slow or block access. Do you believe them?
I actually believe them at the start, and let me explain why. The quickest way to reimpose net neutrality is to anger 100 million Americans. What I think they're actually going to do in the short term, there's going to be long-term consequences for the public sphere. There's no question about that, about political debate. But in the immediate short term, they're going to get their money through they're going to go to the back end, to the heavy users like Netflix and Google, and they're going to ask them to pay differential pricing to reach their consumers. And what will happen there, Amazon.com, for instance, and what will happen there when those prices start going up, I think they're going to pass those costs, Amazon, Netflix, and the others, onto the consumer. I think that's the way the cable companies are going to start out doing this, and the telcos. It's not just the cable companies, but that's how they're going to, it's going to be a slow rollout of implementation. We're going to start seeing our bills going up. And then more will occur.
So in the short term, we may see our Netflix bill go up, our Amazon Prime charge every year go up a little bit, but in the because those companies are being charged. But in the long term, Mike, do you think that this is going to be a situation where if we're, as Mohammed mentioned, an activist group or something like that, we may have trouble accessing others who share our views?
Well, you know, this has occurred in Canada. Bell Canada had a strike. And if you wanted to go to the web page using your Bell Canada ISP to read about the strike against Bell Canada, you couldn't. They blocked it. So that's an example from Canada, which didn't have the net neutrality regulations. So, you know, it to me, it's a question of how the public responds when this starts occurring. But I think it's not going to start occurring through heavy-handed censorship. I think it's going to be things like, You'll want to go to barnesandnoble.com, and because your ISP is getting money from Amazon, you'll be shifted or suggested to go over to Amazon or even your local store. If your local stores don't pay up, then and you try to order through the web for them, the ISPs will gently nudge you to go to the people who are paying them more.
Mohammed, I want to ask you this question. The FCC regulates net neutrality or doesn't regulate net neutrality in the United States of America. But as we all know, it's the World Wide Web. And so much commerce, so much everything crosses national boundaries. How does what happens here affect the rest of the world and vice versa?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, for that, I have to go into some technical aspects of the internet. One aspect there is that if you look at the big companies, for example, Google or Amazon or Facebook, they have what is known as content delivery network. So this is a worldwide geographically distributed network of servers and data centers, so the data doesn't have to travel much. For example, let's say somebody is accessing Facebook from London, UK. Now, that person gives a request to Facebook's web server, that request will not actually travel across Atlantic and come to America and then go back to England. That request will be locally served within some server within Europe, most likely within the UK. So the big companies have already set up these types of geographic network. That will not affect the way they operate globally at all. However, there's also questions about up-and-coming startups, for example. So let's say there's a startup here in Portland. And so they wouldn't have that kind of CDN on content delivery network, global content delivery network right away. And most likely they would not be able to fork or they would not have their financial muscle to purchase some preferential treatment from the ISPs. So there is fear that those up-and-coming startup companies would be hurt on a global scale.
All right. And Mike Sokolow, how about politically, when we're looking across the world? You already mentioned that Canada doesn't have the same net neutrality rules the U.S. has had up until this point. What about other Western European nations, Japan, China? Anybody have net neutrality regulations or even as a philosophy?
Not really, because it stems, I mean, not the way that we specifically enunciated and did it regulatorily because of our First Amendment traditions and our marketplace of ideas kind of things. But I'd like to go back real quick to something Mohammed just said about entrepreneurship and innovation and all the kind of things we rely on the web for. Tim Berners-Lee, who's really been credited with inventing the World Wide Web, tweeted out the following about this specific question. He said, "Net neutrality allowed me to invent the web. If protections are scrapped, innovators will have to ask ISPs for permission to get their ideas out. A disaster for creativity. A disaster for the internet. Tell your reps to stop the vote." This was yesterday. So the inventor of the World Wide Web has said, entrepreneurship will go down, innovation will go down, creativity will go down, because the ISPs will control these kind of things much more, will have much more control over them.
It's interesting because the FCC commissioner, Ajit Pai, is arguing the exact opposite, saying that we're stifling innovation with the rules the way they are today.
Yeah, I understand Ajit Pai's point of view. It actually comes from the viewpoint of Bob Kahn, one of the co-inventors of TCP/IP. Bob Kahn is against net neutrality regulations. And in one colorful language, he actually once said that net neutrality is a slogan that will freeze innovation in the core of the internet. Mm. So he is saying exactly opposite of what Tim Berners-Lee
really
said.
Really big thinkers
so
what's with
going
opposite
on?
Attitude.
What's going on there?
And on that note, we have to take a break. Yeah. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do IMSKIP, hosting its Scandinavian Northern Lights event to benefit the Cancer Community Center, December 15th at Portland's Ocean Gateway. Tickets and information at imskipusacharity.com. And Finance Authority of Maine, working for Maine by helping businesses grow jobs and families reach their higher education goals. FameMaine.com.
5 years ago, a young man walked into an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, and shot and killed 20 children.
This sweet little boy, the caretaker of all living things, the light of happiness in our little family, was among those 20 first grade children who had been shot to death.
Remembering the Sandy Hook Massacre and the story of two fathers who have turned their grief into action. I'm Robert Siegel. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And you can join us for All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, reporter John Lee Anderson brings us a rare interview with the president of Venezuela, where political and economic chaos may give Russia an opening very close to the United States.
We should be engaging with Venezuela because it is going through the sewer on our watch.
John Lee Anderson, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour Saturday afternoon at 2 and again Sunday evening at 11 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the programming, Understanding Net Neutrality. With me in the studio, Mohammed Irfan is with Bowdoin College, where he's assistant professor of digital and computational studies and computer science. And joining me from our Bangor studio, Michael Sokolow, who is with UMaine, where he is associate professor of communication and journalism. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with David, who's calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Listen, I have a historical perspective for this whole issue. First of all, the United States has spent billions of dollars developing GST, which is geostationary satellites, and then we sold them for pennies on the thousands, and people, private Trump entrepreneurs, charge a fortune to use these connections and links that the taxpayers paid for. Secondly, was cable TV. When cable TV came to our town, I listened to a number of national cable TV executives promoting the issue, saying that if you have cable TV, you'll never ever have to see a commercial again because you'll pay the fee. And now we see with net neutrality, which was spent billions of dollars in taxpayer funds between tax breaks and capital costs and things like that to help develop it, that it wants to shift that money over to the private sector, which I think is absolutely fine. But I think there should be some equity in it, and that equity should be that in terms of net neutrality, that there should always, always, always be equal access.
David, your question is similar to an email from, or I guess related to an email from Steve. He writes, I understood that the infrastructure of the Internet began with both ARPANET and DARPANET, both taxpayer-funded for the Department of Defense and later university systems. How then does net neutrality become an issue of the so-called free market in the hands of corporations that are essentially monopolies? Historically, these monopolies have provided some of the poorest customer service and innovation that falls way behind other developed countries. Mike Sokolow, is David's point about his analogy to what happened in the beginning of cable television, do you think accurate or apt here?
It's incredibly accurate. And actually, I'm very pleased to hear ComSat mentioned and what happened with the infrastructure with the satellite telecommunication, because he's absolutely correct. It's even more than he knows. For instance, the insistence of UHF television, which created cable TV eventually and created CNN, was entirely through FCC regulation. The entire industry that we call cable television was when the FCC did the opposite of what it's doing today.
David, thanks so much for your call. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Dan asked three questions. I believe we asked the first already, how our country compares to others. We'll ask this one. How well do the average American and job-creating small businesses and entrepreneurs fare under current neutrality rules, and how well will they fare after dropping the regulations? Again, any comparison to Europe? Is there any lesson to be learned, Mohammed, from how companies, particularly small entrepreneurs, fare in other countries that will be applicable here in the U.S.?
There's actually a distinction between the way the interplay between big companies and the small companies. So I'll actually bring back one misconception about net neutrality. The misconception is that the internet with net neutrality is a level playing field. It is actually not. The reason it's not a net neutrality does not guarantee level playing field, actually goes back to network infrastructure. And for that, we have to look at some data. For example, half of the internet traffic comes from around only 30 sources. And these 30 sources are like Google, Facebook, Netflix, and so on. And so what these companies did is that they made special arrangements with ISPs to deliver their content fast. And these types of arrangements are known as peering. Peering basically refers to a fast line, a direct connection, a hotline with the ISPs. And so basically, it's been going on for 10 years. And in other words, the internet has been essentially rewired for over the last 10 years. So these big companies already have their fast lane with the ISPs, where they get indirect preferential treatment under the net neutrality regulations. And but this, if you think about the smaller companies, they do not have that type of peering system. So that's one thing that could actually address the question.
Joining us now from Washington, D.C., Senator Angus King. Angus, this has been one of your issues for a long time. Thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to join you, Jennifer, but this is disastrous, what they did. I honestly don't understand it. I've had Ajit Pai, the chair of the FCC, in my office. I've talked to him on the phone. I've met with him. I don't get this. They're doing something that is so harmful to our country and to our economy for no good reason. They're solving a problem that doesn't exist, and they're creating a huge problem where the people that own the pipes are going to be able to decide that whether you get Netflix fast or slow. And what if they say, okay, we're going to get, you know, Netflix is going to come fast, so, you know, they're going to pay us a big fee. But what about the startup in somebody's garage who can't pay that fee? I mean, the cool thing about the internet is anybody can play. And anybody can get online, a small business, you can start something in your house. You know, we've got companies all over Maine that are based on the internet. And it just doesn't make any sense. Somebody this morning said, if you like your cable TV, you're going to love this. Because it's going to give those folks the opportunity to block content, to slow down content, to speed up content. And essentially what we're doing is taking a light regulation that on behalf of all the people and turning regulation of the internet over to the giant communication companies. And, you know, they're not bad people, but they're going to act to maximize their profits. That's what they're in business to do. And it's just going to fundamentally change the way the internet works. It's a absolutely horrible decision, totally unnecessary, not to mention the process where, you know, they rushed it through. There were no real hearings. They ignored the fact that a lot of the comments posted on their website appear to be fake. We don't know where they came from. Have I made clear that I don't like it?
Senator King, you and other U.S. senators requested that this vote be delayed. It was not. Why do you believe it was not delayed despite your request?
Well, this is an agenda of this guy, Ajit Pai, who, by the way, is one of the brightest guys I've ever met. And that's why I'm so puzzled by this decision. And I told him, I said, I've never met anybody who is as bright and thoughtful and capable as you, who is so wrong on the issues. I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether this is being driven by the Trump administration, but certainly everybody knew this was coming when Pai took over as the chair. And Senator Collins and I together wrote and said, you know, slow down. There's no rush here. There's no emergency. There's no deadline. Let's take some time and really understand this. And I think, frankly, the reason it was rushed is they don't want people to understand it. The more people know about it and understand it, the more people are going to be angry and try to press them to not do it. And I think this is the net neutrality version of the tax bill. They don't want people to know about it because it'll lose support. But the more people learn, it's just terrible policy.
Senator King, is this a done deal now? And the FCC has decided. Can you, as a U.S. senator, do anything now?
Well, there are two things that can happen. One is I'm sure that this will go to court, and the courts will determine whether the FCC followed the required process. Now, the court isn't going to substitute its judgment for the commission. The court isn't going to say, well, we're going to look at the facts freshly and we're going to be a super FCC. They're not going to do that, but they will look at the process. And I think the business of there was just a Wall Street Journal article this morning of hundreds of thousands of comments submitted on behalf of people who either didn't submit them or are dead or, you know, they were fake. And I think the court may throw out the whole thing saying the process was faulty. So that's number one. Number two, the Congress could fix this. And there are discussions going on. I've talked to John Thune, who's the chair of the Commerce Committee, and I've talked to Bill Nelson, who's the ranking Democrat on the Commerce Committee. And there are a lot of discussions. I've talked to people in the industry. There are a lot of discussions about fixing it in Congress, but to be honest, right now, the majority doesn't seem all that excited about fixing it. And again, I'm just sort of puzzled by this because I don't see any upside. I don't see any positive results of this. They talk about, well, the big companies will invest more in the wires and the pipes, and I hope that happens, but I don't see any real evidence that it will happen, and there isn't any evidence that investment stopped when this rule was put into place first 2 years ago. The rule basically is you can't discriminate against the traffic that's coming over your wires, that whether it's General Motors website or Amazon or, the florist in Augusta, it's got to be all the same. Everybody's treated the same. To me, that's just common sense. And what they're doing is saying the people that own the pipes can discriminate and make preferential deals.
Senator King in the studio with me, here's Mohammed Irfan, who's an assistant professor at Bowdoin, a professor of digital and computational studies. Professor Irfan, you have a question for Senator King.
Oh, okay. So, Senator King, if I may ask you this question. So you have had many conversations with Ajit Pai. And at one point in 2015, in his dissent note to FCC's net neutrality regulation, he actually wrote that, quote, "A dispute this fundamental is not for us, five unelected officials, to decide," end quote. So have you talked to him about what actually changed his mind? Like at that point, he was of the opinion that FCC's five unelected officials should not decide on such crucial issue.
Well, my first reaction is he said that when he didn't have the votes, and now that he has the votes, he's changed his mind. That's a kind of cynical reaction, but I think that's an honest one. And I do think, I agree, this is a major public policy issue. It should be decided by Congress. Apparently there were some, there were some very substantive discussions last year, but they've slowed down. And the question now is whether the Republican majority, now that they've gotten the result that they appeared to want, are going to be interested in correcting it through legislation. I've talked to the industry, both the net neutrality advocates as well as some of the major companies, and they have both told me that they would actually prefer a congressional solution because it would be relatively permanent. They would understand what the rules are, and then they could work with them. Now we've got a situation where if in several years the majority on the FCC changes, the rule could go back the other way, and it business doesn't like that kind of uncertainty. So why he changed that opinion, I think, frankly, is because now he's got the votes to enact the policy that he wants.
Also joining us in our Bangor studio, UMaine Communications and Journalism Professor Mike Sokolow. Mike, any questions for Senator King?
Yes, Senator King. So basically all the polls on net neutrality, including the most recent one from the University of Maryland, show that it's enormously popular. I think the University of Maryland one showed 83% of people who were showed the two policy positions chose net neutrality over what just occurred today. So what's happening in Washington, D.C.? Why aren't the politicians sort of hearing these polls that are out there?
Well, that's a really good question. I try to make my decisions on what I think makes the most sense, not necessarily on polls. But this is a case where, as you just outlined, I think my position miraculously aligns with the public. I don't know why they don't listen. I think people are going to have to get up in arms. I think there was a huge outpouring 2 years ago when this was first being discussed at the commission, a huge public outpouring across the country. This time it sort of snuck up on people, I think. They knew it was coming, but it didn't get the same level of public outcry. And I think that's what's going to have to happen. As I said, there are only two solutions. One is in court, and the better solution would be in Congress. But my colleagues have to get the word that this is a bad idea and that they ought to fix it. I couldn't agree more. As I keep saying, there really isn't a very strong argument on the other side of this. And what we're talking about is, ironically, this is a very similar issue that arose in the 1880s with railroads, where railroads were, you know, giving preferential treatment to certain customers, and the government stepped in and said, no, you got to treat everybody the same. And this is exactly the same issue, and I don't know why they've made this decision. It's a really bad one for the country. And the other option is that the people that own the pipes, that own the wires, could overplay their hands, and it could become obvious that what I'm predicting is going to happen, in which case the public is going to absolutely demand that it be fixed.
Well, Senator Angus King, thanks so much for calling in today from Washington. That was U.S. Senator Angus King, independent from Maine.
Thanks, Jen, and sorry to be so equivocal about my position on it. Talk to you later.
And happy holidays to you. Before we take a quick break, a word about tomorrow's program. We welcome veterinary experts to talk about the care and treatment of your pets and the latest in veterinary medicine. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Good Shepherd Food Bank, partnering to end hunger in Maine, harvesting hope for families in need this holiday season. Learn how you can help at feedingmaine.org. And Bar Harbor Savings and Loan, dedicated to providing local, personalized loan and deposit services since 1902.
On the next Fresh Air, our guest will be Spike Lee, who has expanded and updated his 1986 film She's Gotta Have It into a new 10-part Netflix series of the same name.
You know, I don't believe in labels, but as a sex-positive polyamorous pansexual, words like monogamy and family have never even seemed like a remote possibility.
Join us.
That's Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Stay with us after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock for Speaking in Maine. We'll go to the University of New England's Center for Global Humanities for two conversations. First, with Professor Jason Brennan from Georgetown University speaking about the fairness of democracy. Then it's Professor Mark Bauerlein from Emory University discussing his book, The Dumbest Generation, Young Americans in the Digital Age. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine in about 20 minutes on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, net neutrality. How do new rules, or how might the new rules affect us? Joining me today, Michael Sokolow, who is a UMaine Associate Professor of Communications and Journalism, and Mohammed Irfan is a Bowdoin College Assistant Professor of Digital and Computational Studies and Computer Science. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Going to Rob Sousa calling in. Rob, I understand you are CEO of OTT Communications.
Good afternoon, Jennifer, and that is correct. I certainly appreciate you taking my call. I thought I'd frame my comments first by saying just a little bit about our company. OTT Communications is a telecommunications company and an internet service provider that employs about 120 people in the state of Maine. And we have never participated in throttling or giving prioritization to internet traffic. And our position is that this ruling will not change what we as a company do. In fact, we are concerned about the impact this ruling has on our customers should the large backbone providers participate in those activities. We believe it will likely lead to increased pricing based on some of the comments that your two guests have said. We believe that the large content providers will be charged more money to give prioritization to their traffic, and that ultimately would be pushed down to the consumer.
So although you are an internet service provider, you opposed what happened today.
Yeah, we've been opposed to it right from the start, Jennifer. We actually have filed or sent letters to Senator King and our congressional delegation here in Maine supporting the idea that net neutrality should stay in place. We just think it's a bad thing for it to be taken away. We think it doesn't help the consumer in any way, shape, or form. And to be candid, we're not 100% altruistic. We think it affects us as well as a company. We interconnect to those larger providers. And if those larger providers choose to throttle the type of traffic that our customers are trying to gain access to, we are definitely impacted by that. So we definitely continue to support the idea of net neutrality. And as Senator King said, we're not sure why the FCC has decided to change the rules.
Rob, let me ask you this before you go. What are you, as CEO of OTT, going to do now that this vote has been taken?
We'll continue to work with our delegations. We not only operate in Maine, Jennifer, we have operations throughout New England and also in Alabama and Missouri. And we'll continue to reach out to our delegations to let them know our opinion, and certainly would be willing to assist them in trying to push the point that the FCC's decision today is not a good one.
That's actually a valid concern. Now, there's another aspect to that problem, which is the strategic aspect. And in particular, the strategic power play that's going to happen between the big players on the internet. So as a dropback, so famously in 2014, a communication firm accused six ISPs, including Comcast, of degrading the speed of companies like Netflix to secure some payment. And Netflix at that time in 2014 was very much vocal against practices like that. But very recently in May of 2017, Netflix CEO Reed Hastings said, quote, "We are big enough to get the deals we want. Net neutrality is not our primary battle at this point. We had to carry the water when we were growing up and we were small. And now other companies need to be on that leading edge," end quote. So that's a very interesting quote here. What Reed Hastings, let's imagine a hypothetical case. Let's say I am Reed Hastings, of CEO of Netflix. Well, first of all, it feels great to be Reed Hastings. Now, and let's imagine a situation where an ISP is demanding more money from me to prioritize my content. And what should I say to this ISP? In fact, I will not do any deal. Why not? Because if my traffic, because I have so much customer base as Netflix, if my traffic slows down, then it looks bad on the ISP, not on Netflix. Now compare it to an up-and-coming streaming service. Let's say XYZ Streaming, and they are trying to get market share on a streaming service. Now, if the content of XYZ slows down and the viewing experience is not that good, that will actually look bad on XYZ. That will not look bad on the ISP. So there would be some strategic power play. And because of that, I don't think the prices of big service providers like Netflix will not increase. But it raises some interesting questions. For example, who will pay to get preferential treatment? How much will they pay? Who has more bargaining power? And are we going to observe something that we call rich gets richer type of phenomenon? And how will the ISPs spend their new revenue from these types of deals?
Rob, thanks so much for calling in. Oh, go ahead.
Wait, is Rob still there? Because because
I am.
I just wanted to thank him. Yeah, I want to thank you for calling in because your call really shows how this isn't a Republican or a Democrat issue. I mean, Fletcher Kittredge at GWINet, one of your competitors, is also supports the same political stance you are. This is really, I was wondering, Rob, if you could talk a little bit about how this is about Maine. This is about a place with a small population, a big geographic spread, and the FCC basically just said to Maine that the big companies are going to have leverage over the little companies. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I agree with that comment, and that's what I alluded to earlier on. We interconnect to that larger Internet of Things, and if the larger players are allowed to throttle or prioritize traffic that they deliver to us, to our backbone, which we then distribute to our customers are clearly at a disadvantage, and Maine doesn't need this. Maine needs equal and ready access to the internet without any kind of blocking or prioritization.
Rob Sousa, who is the CEO of OTT, thanks for calling in today. I'm going to move on to an email from Todd in Bristol. My wife and I run a small fine art business and sell approximately $50,000 per year through our website. If net neutrality ends, will some customers no longer be able to reach us through the internet?
There are two things here. One is the network infrastructure where the traffic flows, and the other one is the content, network content. So, for example, presumably your customers are Googling you using some web searching using some keyword, for example. And so the way Google works will not change because of net neutrality regulations or repealing these regulations. So the ordering of search and everything will remain the same. And of course, the ordering depends on location. But that's not also affected by net neutrality, repealing these regulations. Now, what may happen is the way your web content reaches the customers, there may be some effects of slowing down, specifically in peak hours, for example. Let's say I want to watch some videos during peak business hours. So because now ISPs can actually discriminate based on content, they are at will to slow down traffic-heavy internet content. So what could be a solution? One solution would be rethinking the web design of smaller businesses, making the websites a little bit lighter on traffic to get around this issue of latency. So, but other than that, the searching or the way your customers find you will not change.
A tweet just came out from Netflix. We're disappointed in the decision to gut hashtag net neutrality protections that ushered in an unprecedented era of innovation, creativity, and civic engagement. This is the beginning of a longer legal battle. Netflix stands with innovators, large and small, to oppose this misguided FCC order. And also on Facebook from Elaine, thank you, Senator King, for channeling my outrage, but I am not at all puzzled why this is happening. The corporate foxes are in charge of the hen house. Is she right, Mike? Are the corporate foxes in charge of the hen house?
Yes, and I think Muhammad really zeroed in on the question when he talked about Reed Hastings and Netflix, when Muhammad said, you know, this is really a case of the rich getting richer and the strong getting stronger. You know, even though Netflix is upset about this, you know, they use 30% of the broadband traffic. I believe that statistic I saw in the United States. They'll figure out a way to make this pay off. They will. They're not as angry or as outraged as the person here in Maine who's trying to sell things on the internet. And so it's really not a Republican Democrat idea. It's what Muhammad said. It's, you know, it's the policy that will make the stronger and larger companies, even the ones that get discriminated against like Netflix, that will ultimately make them stronger against the small people.
We're going to go to Mike calling from Bass Harbor. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good topic. For me, it's a simple analogy. When FedEx tried to get off the ground, if UPS and the Postal Service could have made sure that FedEx could only use secondary roads and only airports in minor locations, they would have done that. they would have done anything they possibly could to have prevented this upstart from gaining a foothold. And that's what I see will happen with the loss of net neutrality. You'll be able just to throttle back your competitors to the point that they won't matter anymore.
Thanks for your comment, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
Can I respond to that real quick? Yeah, that is a great analogy. And I just want to say media history is filled with stories like that. For those of you who don't know, FM radio was ready to go in the 1930s, but the Radio Corporation of America didn't want to ruin its AM radio profits, and it used the FCC to delay FM radio right up to the 1960s. So this kind of thing has happened often.
Mike, thanks. And we're going to move to Paul in Belfast. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. And yes, these are really good insights I hadn't had about the AM radio postponing FM's acceptance. Ajit Pai, the former Verizon attorney chosen by President Trump to chair the FCC, announced today's vote over Thanksgiving weekend. It was to avoid opposition. Others have said they don't understand the rationale. I'm not puzzled. It's a matter of enriching the rich. This is a First Amendment free speech issue. And ever since corporations became people, we've seen that money is speech. Money talks. Ending net neutrality places control with the highest bidders. It's the giant companies motivated by greed who are going to be in charge here. I don't know what happens now. It'll enter into some legislative process. Maybe the judicial will straighten it out, but this kind of thing has been seen the past year, and it's not very surprising.
Thank you, Paul. And we are almost out of time, but I'm going to give you a little time, Mike, to respond. Do you see this also as a First Amendment issue?
I do, but it's a little bit more complicated when you think about common carriage and Title II rules. But ultimately, the First Amendment is about how we use the media to construct who we are. And so in that sense, yes.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for being here today. You just heard Mike Sokolow. He is a professor of communication and journalism at the University of Maine. He's also the graduate coordinator. And in here with the studio with me, Mohammed Irfan, assistant professor of digital and computational studies and computer science at Bowdoin College. Earlier in the program, we heard from U.S. Senator Angus King. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. We had additional help from Rich Tozier. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, veterinarians and pets, or vets and pets, advice on animal care. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.